Next case is 11-8, 11-10, State of Ohio versus Mario Harris. For the appellant, Mr. Regas.
May it please the court, Alan Regas, representing the State of Ohio. I'm from the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office. This is actually two cases. Mr. Harris was convicted in two separate criminal cases. I'm going to refer to the first one as 498 and the second one as 551. Case four, after his conviction and 2 years after he was sentenced to prison and while serving his prison term, he filed motions for resentencing with the trial court. The trial court denied those motions, and he took an appeal to the 8th District. Now, in case 498, the appellate court looked at the journal entry, said that it wasn't compliant with Criminal Rule 32C, and didn't make any, and dismissed the appeal from that criminal case. That was a drug trafficking case. Both of these are. In the second case, in 551, the appellate court found that he was entitled to a de novo sentencing where the trial court did not impose a mandatory driver's license suspension upon his conviction for drug trafficking as required under 2925.03. This court accepted the 551 case upon a certified question asking, does the failure to include a mandatory driver's license suspension in a criminal sanction render it void, thus subject to a complete sentencing? However, I'd like to go back to and address whether in 498.
Would it be void or voidable?
I think that this court in State versus Fisher gave us the roadmap to what to do here. This portion of the sentence was not imposed. I think that the other portions of the sentence that weren't appealed should stand, and that he should have a hearing as to the imposition of the driver's license suspension.
Didn't we limit Fisher to post-conviction?
Yes.
So you wanted expanded.
I'm not asking it to be expanded. I think
it's limited to post-conviction, and this isn't post-conviction. How do we get it to driver's license suspension without expanding it?
Well, then I would ask you to expand it, Your Honor.
Ask you a different question. Were you trial counsel?
No, I was not.
Which prosecutor attended the sentencing hearing before Judge McGinney?
In this case, there was a trial prosecutor present at the sentencing.
What was his role or her role?
His role, at that point, he provided the court with the forfeiture entry at one point.
And there was an objection made that this wasn't done? Is that?
No, there wasn't. The prosecutor did not correct the court and ask it to impose the driver's license
suspension. What's the purpose of having a prosecutor at a sentencing hearing and stand moot if the objection that is so vital to you today isn't made to the trial court so the trial court can correct it?
I agree. We dropped the ball on that sentencing.
The state waived it?
No, I don't agree with that because it's a mandatory duty upon the part of the trial court to impose that, just as
the duty of the trial lawyer.
The trial lawyer should correct the court at that point, and we did not do that, Your Honor. And
so what are you doing about that in your office?
We have instituted a system where the general felony prosecutors are now personally assigned a case from beginning to end. So in that regard, I would
like who's acquainting them with what trial judges should be doing so that they can make sure that these points are all covered?
We address that through several avenues, including our in-house training. I know that we just did something in the spring about that, as well as our appellate unit offering support to everyone. Can we do a better job? Yes, we can. Did we do this incorrectly 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago in 2008? Yes.
In two cases,
yes. They were sentenced at the same time.
Were these combined by the Court of Appeals for one appeal? Is that how we get two at the same time?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were, Your Honor. If I could go back to the 498 case where the court found that the journal entry was not compliant with Criminal Rule 32C, We disagree with that. We believe that their journal entry, specifically they found that because the court did not order the forfeiture upon the forfeiture specification in that case in the as part of the sentence in the single entry, that it was not a final appealable order. I think it is for two reasons. One, the specification is not an offense. And the order in this case did impose the sentence. It didn't impose it correctly. And the state obviously concedes that in both these cases, the sentencing was not done correctly. However, the sentence was there. And under Criminal Rule 32C, it requires that the sentence that is imposed be included. So it doesn't require that it be perfect.
Your solution is what, to remand for the limited purpose of adding the mandatory driver's license sentence?
Yes, in both cases.
And no de novo review of the remaining parts of the sentence that have already properly been imposed?
Exactly. And I think that even though Fisher, it did state that it was limited to those cases, including the error in post-release control. I think that same logic would apply here, that this is a mandatory sanction that needs to be imposed just as post-release control is. Affects another branch of the government here, the driver's licensing bureau. And that the logic of segregating that from the rest of the sanctions imposed and correcting only that was found to be an error is appropriate in both of these cases on remand.
So, Mr. Regas, would we have to overrule a number of cases in which it was said that if there was a mandatory sanction missing in a sentence, the sentence is void? Would we have to go back to the cases that were previous to that, which talked about an error being corrected within the 30 days of the sentencing, and if it was not corrected, that was waived by both parties, that the error had to be dealt with within 30 days, and then the sentence was raised judicata?
No, I don't think we need to go back. I think.
How do you distinguish then what you're asking us to do from not making the changes to those cases?
I think under State versus under Fisher, I think we saw that the issue of whether or not the sentence in and of itself is void, only that portion of the sentence would be void because it omits.
And we were talking about post-release control in Fisher, as
yes.
Justice O'Donnell pointed out.
I know it is limited to those cases. However, the history, the cases in the criminal law that found the sentences to be void, the older cases before we got to Jordan and the post-release control cases, we found those cases were based on an improper application of the law. The State versus Beasley case was an illegal sentence. It was too long for what the statute required. We said that was void. However, here we have a sentence that's incomplete or a portion that's missing. So that portion that's missing should be addressed because it is mandatory in these cases. If it wasn't mandatory, Your Honor, I would say that the argument that it would be voidable and just the simple sentencing error that was subject there would be appropriate to find it voidable and subject to appeal and res judicata. However, because the law does require the suspension be imposed, as it does post-release control, that the same remedy for the post-release control error or omission should apply where a fine is there or where costs aren't imposed.
Counsel, the license suspension that was required was, 6 months to 5 years?
Yes.
The actual sentence that the defendant is serving is 5 years?
5 years in one case, 1 year in the other, to be served consecutively.
Is there a possibility of early release? And it goes to my question, if he's going to be in jail for 5 years, does it really matter whether the license is suspended or not? Isn't this a moot question, in essence?
Yes, it is. It is. However, the fact that the law requires the suspension to be put in place does make this an actual issue going forward. And we do have a conflict in terms of whether or not that there's a final appealable order in one case, whereas in the suspension case, we do need to know that. And I think the language in the conflict case in Fain showed that considering whether or not that was a void or avoidable or a de novo review did take into account that in that case, that defendant was already under a suspension, and this one didn't affect him in any way or didn't affect any other branch of the government. So in this case, no, there wouldn't be an effect on him being in jail for the 6 years. So I would ask that this, I'd ask to reserve the time. I don't believe I did, if I may, for rebuttal. But I'd ask that this court find that because a sentence was imposed in the criminal 32, under criminal 32, even though it was imperfect, that did create a final appealable order, and the Court of Appeals should have addressed that case in case number 498. Case 551, I'd ask that this court find that the failure to include the mandatory driver's license suspension does not render the totality of the sentence void, and just that portion that is missing, akin to State versus Fisher's treatment of post-release control. I'd ask to save the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Counsel.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, in case number CR 506498, the 8th District Court of Appeals corrected a common error. Mr. Harris was convicted of drug trafficking and having a weapon under disability. He was ordered to forfeit cash, cell phones, and a revolver. The order of forfeiture was part of his sentence, and therefore, under State versus Baker, the entry that did not include the order of forfeiture was not a final appealable order. The 8th District, therefore, correctly dismissed the appeal.
I have two questions. On the driver's license, am I correct that you are appealing it because your client wasn't sentenced enough, that he should have had more of a sentence because he should have had his driver's license taken?
I would disagree with that characterization, Your Honor. Mr. Harris filed a motion for resentencing so that he could have his sentence properly imposed according to law, and he also asked for a de novo sentencing.
So you did this because of some tactical belief that you would get a better sentence, perhaps, when it remanded? Because if it was remanded and the same sentence was reposed, your client was going to get more of a sentence.
It is possible that the outcome would be he would receive a driver's license suspension where he doesn't have one now.
Possible? It's mandatory.
Yes, Your Honor. If he's successful, he would receive a mandatory driver's license suspension.
Okay. You're appealing a sentence to ask for more time. And then secondly, on the forfeiture, if we give you what you want on that, then your client's ability to appeal may drag out for a very long period while forfeiture issues are resolved, which is the point the prosecutor makes. And is that to your client's benefit? I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding why you're asking things that seem to be detrimental to your client.
If I could address the first of those, Your Honor, it is possible with a de novo resentencing that Mr. Harris would receive less of a prison term while he would also receive a driver's license suspension.
Why would he receive less of a prison term?
With a de novo resentencing, the trial judge is entitled to take into account his conduct during incarceration, and it's possible that he would receive a lower term of incarceration. And to address the second point, I disagree that this would drag out his appeal if forfeiture needed to be included. Order of forfeiture is final once the entry is submitted, and either party can appeal at that point.
Okay, if you're at the sentencing point and somebody stands up and says, that was my car, it wasn't his car, you can't take it, that was my cash, does the court say, well, I'm going to order the forfeiture and then you could fight it out afterwards, or does the court continue it and hold hearings on the forfeiture and figure out whose assets or cash or car it really was?
According to 29-81-04-D, it refers to the activities that can occur after the entry of forfeiture.
They can, but if somebody contests it before the sentencing entry is, does the court ignore that and just go ahead and sentence and say, now you have to attack it afterwards, if the court has evidence in front of it that it needs to have another hearing on and resolve?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be after the entry of forfeiture, and at that time, it is a final appealable order with the right to appeal. The proceedings afterward to attach the property, perhaps by a third party, would occur ancillary to those proceedings.
So somebody stands up in court and says, wait, Judge, don't enter this order. It's my car. The court says, well, that's tough. I'm going to enter the order, and you have to fight it out after it's a final appealable order. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor, because the order of forfeiture terminates the right of the defendant to the property, not the rights of others. In case number 510-551, the court is asked to determine whether the failure to include a driver's license suspension renders the sentence void. The court's holding in Jordan is clear. It has not been overruled. It requires a de novo resentencing when a sentence does not include a statutorily mandated.
So your client's license was already suspended. Isn't that true?
It's not in the record, Your Honor, but I believe that's correct, yes.
For how long, or was it a permanent revocation?
I'm not sure about that, Your Honor. I don't believe it was a permanent revocation. To address the mootness question, it is possible that his driver's license could be suspended while he's incarcerated. It is also possible it could be suspended concurrent to his sentence, or consecutive to his sentence, excuse me.
It could be suspended consecutive to a sentence?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the authority for that?
There's two Court of Appeals cases. This court hasn't specifically addressed the issue, and it's not clear from the statute. But there's two Courts of Appeals cases that deal with suspending a driver's license suspension after a term of incarceration is completed. State versus Hiles, 2003, Ohio 6290, and State versus Lyons, 2009, Ohio 6515.
Ms. Lopresti, if we took the state's position in this case, would there have to be other cases that were overruled to do that?
Yes, Your Honor. The Jordan line of cases would have to be overruled because those cases make it clear that the failure to include a mandatory term of incarceration renders that sentence void and subject to de novo resentencing. State versus Fisher is limited to the post-release control context.
Well, there's nothing to stop us from using the same analysis as in Fisher and applying it to this provision for the license suspension, correct?
The court may do that. It should not do that for a number of reasons. The Fisher case is in response to a statute that allows limited resentencing, 2929-191. In addition, leaving post-release control to the context of leaving resentencing to the partial resentencing to the post-release control context would encourage trial courts in all other situations to correctly impose mandatory terms at the earliest opportunity. And in cases outside the post-release control context, the first district in State versus Fain, the dissenting judge gave a list of situations where courts of appeals have applied Jordan and allowed de novo resentencing without some of the difficulties that have occurred during the post-release control context. A driver's license suspension is mandatory under Revised Code Section 29-2503G. It reads that the court shall suspend for not less than 6 months or more than 5 years the driver's license suspension of a person convicted of a violation. And so according to this court's recent jurisprudence, the entire sentence is void. It's a nullity, and a de novo sentencing is required in this case. I would therefore ask the court to answer the certified question in the positive, affirm the court's dismissal of case number 506-498 for lack of a final appealable order, and affirm the remand of case 510-551 for resentencing. There are no questions. I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Regas, you've saved 3.5 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to address the question regarding whether or not things need to be overruled. I don't think the Jordan cases need to be overruled in this case. I think that this court can apply the remedy in Fisher. And Fisher was, even though limited to post-release control, and there is a statute 2929191, I don't think that played a role in Fisher's segregation of the sanction and finding that portion. Because I think in Singleton, prior to Fisher, 191 was a consideration. However, that this court changed that.
So any mandatory condition or anything that the trial judge must do at sentencing that says shall, I mean, if we read the Jordan line of cases broadly, if there is a missing mandatory term, the sentence is void, and you're saying that we should just look at the license suspension and call that similar to post-release control, but not worry about these other so-called mandatory terms. Is that what you're saying?
Or just as in Joseph, the imposition costs are mandatory. I think that did not create a situation that the entire sentence was reviewed de novo. I believe that the logic of segregating the specific error and sanction that would be mandatory is appropriate, and to ensure that we can correct errors of this nature. We're not talking about discretionary portions of the sentence, which are subject to the 30-day or avoidable analysis.
Well, this voidable problem comes into play when we're talking about an appeal outside of the 30 days. I mean, that was one of the reasons
Yes.
for the line of cases to be the way they were. How do we make it clear to the courts of appeals when an error is considered unimportant or it does not rise to the level of the post-release control void that was subject then to correction by Fisher? It seems that we're still confusing the issue for the Court of Appeals.
I believe that Fisher did provide the roadmap, and to find that if there's a sanction that's mandatory, that's omitted, that if the other portions of the sentence, if we're not on a direct appeal situation, those are subject to res judicata, and only that which was not imposed or not found to be an error would be appropriate for remand or for correction.
So are you saying that Fisher in and of itself has, in a sense, abrogated the Jordan line of cases as far as the broad language regarding void and voidable? Is that your position?
No, because I still think that if a sentence is imposed that, for example, if there's a five-year sentence on an F3 after HB 86, which reduced the sentence, if that would be imposed, I believe that would still be void and subject to the Jordan analysis, where it's completely it would be void in that case. Here we're talking about something that's different. This is where the court had a duty to act and it didn't act. I think that's different than prior to this line of cases. Beasley in 1974 dealt with a sentence that was too long. Prior to that, the Cosgrove case, the same thing. It wasn't where the court failed to act and impose a separate sanction that I think there is a difference to be found, and I think in Fisher that this court followed Saxon and segregated that specific duty or portion of the sentence and found that that portion would be void and subject to correction.
Counsel, I know your time has expired, but I want to shift your attention just a moment to the forfeiture issue, because actually that might be more troubling than this other issue. Is it your contention that the forfeiture, although it takes place in a criminal proceeding, is essentially a civil order? Therefore, it does not have to be contained in the same document as the other portion of the sentence?
Yes. I think that is the position that we did take in our brief and that I did take here, that I'm not saying whether or not that the we're not contesting whether the forfeiture was proper. It was agreed to in this case. The fact that it was not in the entry of conviction, the specific forfeiture of the cash, the firearm, I believe a couple cell phones, in case 498, the fact that that's not there does not mean that that entry that stated what he was found guilty of, stated what the court's sentence was imposed. I don't think that that is not a final appealable order. That is an order that's subject to appeal. Now, the fact that there's a civil remedy and third parties can enter after this and delay these proceedings, and does the court have to not enter the conviction? I believe that it does need to order the forfeiture. However, I do believe that that forfeiture does not specifically have to be in the entry of conviction to make it a final appealable order. I think that can be, in this case, as it was, dealt with in a separate entry on the following, it was actually the following day, and that forfeiture entry encompassed the co-defendant's interests as well. So that had finalized this case in terms of the forfeiture to the state. So
because it's not a part of the criminal sentence or because it's not a criminal issue? I'm not really clear here, and I wasn't real clear after reading the briefs either, which is why I pursue it, because it has some significance to whether or not, you know, this matter goes back to the trial court.
I think in essence it's the forfeiture is subject to a separate standard. At best, this court has stated that the forfeiture is akin under the constitutional cruel and unusual punishment analysis, is akin, closely akin to a fine, if that. The fact that a fine is not entered as part of the sentence is simply an error in the sentence. It doesn't create the 32C problem that it's incomplete and doesn't create and doesn't give the notice that the sentence was entered. An error in the sentence in an entry of conviction does not make it not a final appealable order. Here we had the verdict on the specification. Here we had the sentence that the court imposed, and of course it was signed and stamped. So that was a final appealable order. What we're confusing is an obvious error in the sentence, in these cases, omissions.
So there was a forfeiture imposed then at the sentencing hearing by the court?
I would have to go back to the sentencing transcript. I cannot remember if I believe it was, because in these two cases were sentenced at the same time. The forfeiture was agreed to at the plea, and then it was imposed in the other journal entry. And then we submitted a journal entry for the court's approval as to the forfeiture in 498, which dealt with all three defendants in that case, including Mr. Harris. In the other case, it was placed in there. But, however, I think that when we look at 32C and look at the entry, the fact that a fine wasn't imposed would make 551 in this case, the fine wasn't there, so therefore it wouldn't be a final appealable order. I don't think that's what 32C requires. All it requires is that the sentence that the court imposed be in place, and that therefore any error there would be premature to say that that's not a final appealable order, Your Honor. I'd ask that this court reverse the 8th District, find that there was a final appealable order, and remand both of these cases to the trial court to deal with the license suspension and the fine in 498. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Thank you very much.